This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Reading is a skill considered so basic, it's the first of the three R's of learning: reading, writing, and arithmetic. Yet students across the country are struggling with literacy. The 2026 Annie E. Casey Kids Count data book shows that 70% of all fourth graders are not reading proficiently. Among Black students, that figure stands at 84%. And in St. Louis, alarmingly low literacy rates among Black children prompted the St. Louis chapter of the NAACP to file a civil rights complaint with the Department of Education in 2024. This Saturday, a group of Black St. Louis authors will be part of a free event at Ritz Park that aims to address that literacy gap by showing youth that reading is fire and that loving books can and should include youth writing stories of their own. Joining us to share more about that event and its approach is its organizer, St. Louis author Darian Wigfall. Darian, great to have you on the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And welcome. So, first, tell us about the inspiration for this event. What gave you the idea to put it together?
Well, I was talking with a friend who's also a fellow creative and a fire dancer. And so she was telling me that, well, we were kind of talking about literacy and reading and things like that, just in this world and age of AI. And she was saying that if I wanted to get more eyes on my books from kids, that I should do some events, right, so that they can come and see me, talk to me maybe, and get maybe inspired from the book and things like that. So that conversation led me to, about a year ago, start planning for this and invite some other authors, because I didn't want to just be about me. Mm-hmm.
What is a fire dancer?
So she like dances. So she has like some apparatus, like maybe with metal or other materials that at the end of it has like fire. And like she'll just kind of dance to music and move with the fire. And at the end will like swallow the flame and like douse it.
Okay, yeah. So this is where part of reading is fire is coming from.
The fire, yeah, the reading and the fire are coming together.
But then fire also.
Yes,
awesome.
Actual fire, yes.
Right. Darian, give us a little bit of background on how you learned how to read and then to love books, because they're not necessarily the same thing, right?
It's a long journey. It kind of goes back to when I was probably 3 or 4 years old, and my mother and I would read together at night, and she was teaching me how to read. And then as we progressed, I was reading the books to her, right? And so after that period, I'd say from about 3 to 6 years old, she would take me and my sister to the library every weekend, and then we would pick up books to read for the week, especially during the summertime. And so in those moments, I was allowed to like pick something that I wanted to read versus like what you have to read for school. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where my love of books came from. And
was there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there a particular library you frequented?
I believe it's the Thornhill branch across from Parkway North. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's one that I have gone to a lot with my, with my son.
It's a great one.
The romance in books, you know, what was the thing that made you fall in love with books?
It is the stories. And I, you know, people will tell stories in person and verbally, but like when you read a book, it's different because the world starts to form in your head, right? Like there's a world that the author created, and the descriptions and character and characteristics start to form like this visual in your head. And some people may or may not speak visually, so sometimes you don't get that from like interactions personally, but in books, it just like, it's almost like a movie is happening as you're reading, at least for me, my experience in reading. So that really enamored me with that even before I got into films.
Mm-hmm. You have worked with kids in the past as a tutor.
Indeed.
And you are out in community in very many different ways.
Yes.
Over the years, what have you observed, Darian, about kids and adults' ability to read?
It is declining rapidly. I coming from a household that education was very much at the forefront of things, and learning how to read early, as I said, around 3 or 4, it just seeing how in like tutoring or mentoring programs, the parents may or may not be able to read forms that were given to them to give permission for a field trip for a kid or something like that. And then the kids also are also usually on a device like a phone or a tablet, and getting them to switch and read books was very difficult. I'm kind of speaking about the tutoring program that we had in Ferguson in 2015, 2016 school years. I just saw a lot of parental and student interaction, and I could tell even from when some of the parents would come in and volunteer to help, right? But they weren't able to do all the work or help with all the work that their children were bringing home. So then we would have to supplement that with a trained tutor. But seeing that experience just really kind of dawned on me that adults aren't reading and kids aren't reading.
Mm-hmm. Were there certain coping mechanisms that you saw them employ in order to get around that that challenge of not being able to read?
I honestly saw the opposite. Like there was little that was there to help them cope. And there was a lot of frustration and anger that would come out because of that lack of ability, I think, to communicate. I think when you read, you learn more words, right? And then being able to communicate using those words, maybe you learn the meanings behind them. Being able to communicate even from your child to the parent or the parent to the child is crucial, right, to have a good relationship. And I think because they weren't able to communicate well, there was a lot of frustration there. And even to the point where when some children were kind of progressing in their studies, I saw some parents becoming sort of jealous, which was really disheartening to mm-hmm. me. But like, I guess, you know, as a human to human, I can understand that. But it was really disheartening to see parents being like, oh, you're getting smart now. Oh, okay. You know, what are you going to leave us behind? What, you know, those types of things. So mm-hmm. I really think that there was a lack of coping mechanism there.
Yeah. What was it that motivated you to become a literacy advocate? Like, how did that start? And did it develop in a particular way, especially because of the pandemic and some of the losses that were experienced then?
For sure. I think it really started with financial literacy, but I understood that to be financially literate because I think in the Black community, we're, you know, historically disenfranchised economically. But even if you can't read, you can't really understand economics or your finances and things like that. It is a lot of numbers, but there's a lot of reading as well. And so I saw literacy as the root, really, as far as becoming self-actualized or finishing your education, whatever your goal is, literacy is the key. And so I would say probably about 5 to 6 years ago, I really became an advocate for literacy. I would go to conferences and speak or try to connect people that were doing work on those things. But literacy has really become a mission for me.
Mm-hmm. And overall, literacy has become a challenge. According to the National Literacy Institute, in 2022, it found that 21% of adults in the U.S. were illiterate. And currently, 45 million adults in the United States are functionally illiterate and read below a fifth grade level, which is, it's jarring to read that.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah, it is a lot of people. Now, when you have encountered stereotypes, mm-hmm. particularly about literacy and intelligence among Black community members, how have you addressed that?
That's interesting. And it really is kind of an individual basis. I just finished this book called The Great Black Hope, where they're talking about the history of the Black quarterback. And it literally is related to intelligence and being able to read, right, and be able to lead in different spaces. So in my personal life, how I deal with it is like what we say, call in somebody. Hey, you know, not in front of other people, but say, hey, you know, I noticed that you had a little trouble with that last piece. You know, are you struggling to read, or is there something else that I can help with? And then just try to help that individual with like whatever resources I can give, you know, in that moment.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Darian Wigfall. He's a St. Louis literacy advocate and an author. We're going to talk about the books very shortly, but I'd like to add another voice to this conversation. Mm-hmm. Pancho Rucker is the author of several books, including at least four he has also illustrated. Welcome to the program, Pancho.
Thank you for having
me. Great to see you here. So we've been talking so far about your journey, mm-hmm. Darian, in reading, in literacy, what you have observed in communities that you have worked with. Mm-hmm. Pancho, for you, having grown up in St. Louis and in North St. Louis, mm-hmm. what was it that you saw that was missing in the literacy picture that also then prompted you to write your own books?
Our story. A lot of times there's not a big representation of a person authentically being themselves or a person that is from the same area as you. So to represent Northside in the way that I do and going through the same trials and tribulations, the same things that we go through every day, to represent my community was something that I seen that was needed and definitely was something that needed to be just exposed and shown in a brighter light.
Mm-hmm. Is there an example from one of your early books mm-hmm. where you saw students connecting with what was presented there?
My book, Chin Up, Chest Out.
Okay.
I've presented that book not only just on Fred Rogers Week for PBS, but in children's or teenage medium security prisons. And the words that I had them read, and it resonated with them. And even the last words of the book is, "I love you." Mm. And them understanding that no one really says that. So that more so from an emotional standpoint, from just another black male to another black male telling them that spoke volumes with them. And they told me, like, I received an email from one of the kids that got out and was like, "I still read the book to this day."
Mm-hmm. Darian, what comes to mind as you hear that?
Honestly, it reflects an experience I had when I was working at St. Louis Public Library in the teen services. I was at the teen services provider in their teen lounge, and some of the teenagers that were regulars found out that I was an author. And one of the kids read it within my shift, and he loved it. He's like, "Do you have another one?"
Which
I did not. This is A Dying Breed,
okay.
Volume 1. And another kid read it overnight, and in the morning he was the first one in, and he was like, "Hey, can I talk to you outside the room?" Right? And so he pulled me outside the room, and he literally like was holding the book, crying and shaking, and was like, "This is my story. I don't know how you know to write this, but this is my story." And he started telling me about his mother that had like kicked him out because he didn't get a job, and he was basically coming to the library because that was the only place he could be that was safe, you know, outside of, you know, the other hours that we were closed. And yeah, just many stories like that have come from writing this book mm-hmm. and kids reading it.
Each of you have had some work with the organization Black Men Read.
Mm-hmm.
Why, as Black men, is the writing component of what you do so important? There is the reading, obviously, but the mm-hmm. writing part, Pancho.
We have to tell our story. If you can see on a lot of different platforms and a lot of different places that navigate the quote unquote black voice, it usually is it's hyper exposed into so many different negative stereotypes and standpoints to where that it doesn't it's not conducive. So we need to tell our own story. Books are already being erased. Books are already being taken away and putting in a negative stigma, even calling it critical race theory, so on and so forth. So the only people that will be able to tell our story and write our story is us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the empowerment component of it.
Mm-hmm.
Talk with us about how being the author of your own book is also being the author of your life in other ways, Darian?
Well, I would say that it really comes from the motivation to write this first book was I was part of a mentoring program called Urban Future, and I was mentoring a kid named Earl that really reminded me of myself. His mother was on him about his grades. He was getting good grades and things like that, but his friends, cousins were like drinking and like starting to, you know, have relations and things like that. So he was like, how do I deal with this? I don't even know how to navigate this, but they're sort of inviting me to these things and I don't know what to do. And so when we were able to navigate that in that moment, but after that, I was like, well, how do I really weren't supposed to stay in touch with them, although we did have contact afterwards. But I was like, what about the other kids that were in the program, the other students that are coming through this program, the other mentors? How do we have resources that tell the story of what's happening with him so that we understand even before we get there to have some kind of knowledge and understanding to help these kids? And that's where this book came from, and the empowerment of just telling Earl that I had written about him, he cried. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like Pancho said, writing our own story is so powerful that we both have programs that are designed to help young students do that.
Mm-hmm. Pancho, your books, a number of them are mm-hmm. for younger mm-hmm. readers. Mm-hmm. What do your books put out as a message to them?
It depends, because certain stories was specifically for I had a stroke in 2018. So I wanted to make some stories for my daughter, who was one at the time, and she's 9 now, to where if anything was to happen or my health declined or anything of that nature, I could have some things to teach her. So with the cleanup BB and the see that BB, those were educational pieces. But then as my health got a lot better, I wanted to instill values and principles and self-confidence in her, as well as my bonus son and other children that are like them. So men and women, you know, of any age, because like Chin Up Chest Out and Hey You Black Girl are definitely messages that can go for all ages, to let them know that, hey, you are worth it. So I really wanted to project a message that you are worth more than what is projected on media, mm-hmm. on social media, mm-hmm. be it you can do more than just shoot a basketball or entertain, or you can be a scientist, you can be a lawyer, you can be anything that you deem yourself to be, mm-hmm. in spite of the social stigmas or the barriers that we face as Black and brown people in America.
Mm-hmm. Now, this event on Saturday is mm-hmm. a very intentionally community engaged event. There are Indeed. Several partners who are involved. Very quickly, Darian, what can people expect?
So you can expect to see some local authors between myself, Pancho, and like at least 4 or 5 others that are bringing their books. You can actually talk to the author that wrote the book that you're buying. We also have a musical performance from my guy, Ryan Marquez, aka Conscious Keys, bringing some messages about literacy and, you know, self-actualization, becoming what you want to be. And then we also have a fire dancer named Casey, Reading is Fire, you know, bringing those things together, trying to, you know, make a little splash for the kids, a little bit of a show and pageantry for them so that they, you know, want to be there, right? It actually is kind of cool to be there, right? Reading is fire, and try to make reading cool as well.
And why did you agree to be part of this, Pancho, in the last 30 seconds or so?
Well, first and foremost, Darian's my guy. I've been knowing him for minutes. So anytime he says to do something, I'm going to step up and do it. Also, the currency that he holds in the community, I definitely want to help him further that as much as I possibly can. That's in a nutshell. But outside of that, this is a great event. Even if he wasn't doing it, I want to be a part of that and help further along literacy.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Darian, how should people come? What should they bring with them?
Bring your money to buy some books. But they're not expensive, so you can get quite a few. If you want tickets, You can go on Eventbrite and look up Reading Inspire, because we do have a partnership with Steve's Hot Dogs to get a discount that day. So bring your ticket stub on your phone or however you want to print that out so that you can get that discount. And if you want to start being a reading superstar with Steve's, you can do that as well. You can sign up there.
Mm-hmm. Darian Wigfall is a St. Louisan, an author, and the organizer of Reading is Fire. And Poncho Rucker, also a St. Louis native, is the author of several books for kids and teens. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you
for having us.
The Reading is Fire event takes place this Saturday, June 13th from 11 to 2 p.m. at Ritz Park. For more information, visit eventbrite.com and search for Reading is Fire.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.